For more information on ancient dragon Zengate and Taigen's teachings, please visit our website at www.ancientdragon.org. Our teachings are offered to the community through the generosity of our supporters. To make a donation online, please click on the link for Just Give on our website.
I thought I would use as the basis for our talk tonight a koan from the Gateless Barrier, the Wumen Quan. It's case 13. It's also case 55 in the Book of Serenity. So this is a koan that our tradition has considered pretty important for it to appear in two of the main compilations of koans. It's a challenging koan. I don't think it's because it's a brain cracker quite like, say, the Mu Koan or some of the others, or the oak tree in the garden, that sort of thing. It's just that this one is so wide open in a number of ways that it can be kind of challenging, and I think that its value, as much as anything, is just watching yourself try to deal with this thing and trying to extract meaning from it. But let me read it for you. It's Dishan Bowls in Hand. It's usually translated something like Dishan carries his bowls, something along those lines. So the case is, Dishan one day descended to the dining hall, bowls in hand. Shuifang asked him, "Where are you going with your bowls in hand, old teacher? The bell is not rung and the drum is not sounded." Dishan turned and went back to his room. Weifang brought up this matter with Yento, and Yento said, "Dishan, great as he is, does not yet know the last word." Hearing about this, Dishan sent for Yento and asked, "Don't you approve of this old monk?" Yento whispered his meaning. Dishan said nothing further. But the next day, when Dishan took the high seat before his assembly, his presentation was very different from usual. Yento came to the front of the hall, rubbing his hands and laughing loudly, saying, "How delightful! Our old boss has got hold of the last word. From now on, no one under heaven can outdo him." So the woman's comment just is, as to the last word, neither Yento nor Dishan has yet dreamed of it. When you examine them closely, you find they're just like Punch and Judy in a puppet show. And woman has a verse that's translated different ways, but it usually says something like, when you realize the first word, you realize the second word. First word, last word, not a word. Something along those lines. So, you know, it's a very short koan, but it's actually more complicated than you would think. There are four different scenes that take place in this thing. And I think each of them bears some consideration, and hopefully we have enough time for me to consider them all. But as background, you know, there are three persons involved in this. There's Dishan, who was a great Zen teacher. He appears in a number of koans in the Book of Serenity, Wumen Quan, in the Blue Cliff Record. He was about 80 years old when, at the time of this story. And an interesting thing about him was he was famous for not particularly approving of verbal teaching. He was a big nonverbal guy, and he was famous for part of his life, at least, for hitting people with a stick. Yeah, thank you. When they had questions. And that's kind of interesting because originally, when he started off as a monk, he became a sutra master. He had studied for years and years, wrote massive commentaries on the Vinaya, and especially on the Diamond Sutra. And, you know, when the Zen school at that time already had the sort of the slogan of a teaching outside words and letters, and Dishan hated that idea. So having studied in the north, he was coming down to the south to destroy these Zen people. And he followed that path for a while, and then he had his great awakening and change. His great awakening was kind of interesting because he was traveling around getting ready to find Zen monasteries where he could have debates and trash the Zen masters and make everybody realize that this Zen business was a waste of time. And he ran into a tea lady. So these tea ladies appear in lots of koans. So it's an old lady who's got a cart, and she's serving buns and tea, and serving refreshments, is the way they're always described in the koans. And Dishan was going to come and buy some refreshments. And the old tea lady said, "Well, what is all this stuff in this wheelbarrow you've got?" He says, "Well, that's the Lotus Sutra, that's the Diamond Sutra, and all of my commentaries. I've written quite a few." And she said, "Well, oh, good. Well, tell me about this. The Diamond Sutra says you can't grasp your past mind, can't grasp your present mind, can't grasp your future mind. Which mind are you going to refresh when you drink this tea and eat these buns?" And Dishan was kind of just stunned. He had nothing to say to that. And said, "Well, where can I find a Zen master around here?" And she said, "Well, okay." He gave him the directions to Lungtan. So he went to visit Lungtan, who was very generous.
Part of the story is after he was showed up by the tea lady, he realized he didn't know anything and he burned all of his commentary.
Well, that's one version. The other version is he was with Lungtan. And he spent the night with Lungtan, and who was very generous in spending the whole evening with him talking about Buddhism and Zen. And when it was time for Dishan to leave, Lungtan lit a candle for him and handed it to him. And then, just as Dishan was about to leave, he blew out the candle. And at that moment, Dishan had a great awakening and came back the next morning with a torch and all of his commentaries and burned them then. So you can see that he had had a real change there and had left his verbal teaching behind him. So the other two people here are Shuifang and Yanto, and both of them became great Zen teachers themselves. Shuifang was in his 34 or so about this time, and was well known as I won't say a plotter, but let's just say that he worked very hard and practiced very hard. And Yanto was famous. He was younger, but he was famous as really a brilliant Zen student. And Shuifang and Yanto became very close friends in their koans about the two of them and interactions they had as well. So I think I do like this koan a lot. I think it has there are many interpretations of this koan, and they come out in all sorts of different places. So if you have something to say, you're going to be fine. You won't say anything that somebody else hasn't already said who's supposed to be a Zen master. So you can't say anything wrong about this. But I'll just say that I think this is a real koan of contrast, that there's a demonstration of what Zen should be and examples of contrasts of maybe what's not Zen or not yet Zen. So in the first scene, the whole deal is it's set up so that Deshan's come down, he's got his bowls, he's come down to the monastery dining hall, and it's not clear exactly what's happened. Nobody's there. And so he's gone to see Shuifang, who's the Tenzo, and it's not clear, nobody's there, and the Book of Serenity says, well, lunch was late. So there's been some sort of confusion going on. So Deshan is there, and he either thinks, well, lunch is late, I'm hungry, and I haven't heard the bell or the drum, maybe I just missed it, or he's just kind of, I'm hungry, what's going on? But the reaction he gets from Shuifang is kind of interesting. He was, He's a little frenzied. He's trying to get lunch ready, and the Zen master comes in and says, well, when's lunch? And he doesn't say, well, we're a little late today. Why don't you wait for... we'll have the bell and the drum in a few minutes, and you can come back and have lunch then. He just explodes, right? He says, well, did you hear the bell? Did you hear the drum? So, just go, old man. And so the interesting thing is, you know, even in the language of the koan, it's really an overreaction. And the interesting thing for me is that most of us on the other side of this, just the way we are, I mean, the way we live is we'd already be disappointed because we're hungry and our lunch is late. But then this monk, this insubordinate monk, blesses me out. What would the reaction be? But that's not what Deshan does. He just bows, doesn't say anything, goes back to his room with his bowls to wait for the bell and the drum. So I think that it's great. It's marvelous. It's really what we aim to do, what we aim to become. You know, in our ordinary life, we are having our buttons pushed all the time because we have expectations of how things are and how things are supposed to be and what we want, and we draw lines and make boxes and the world fits in there, and when the world doesn't fit comfortably within the lines and inside the boxes, we react automatically. I mean, the emotions come up. We get angry, we get anxious, whatever. And I think we could say, I mean, Deshan's not a Superman, and he felt the same thing, but he was aware of it, and he let go and was able to act. I mean, this is the perfect expression of the precept not to abide in anger, right? But it's just also a general demonstration of how we live, and for that matter, what Zazen is about. We sit in this fairly artificial posture, and we're not allowed to move, and emotions and thoughts and expectations come up, and we let them go, and we come up over and over again. And even when we're making mistakes and we see them, we just keep going, but we don't act out on the frustrations or the anxiety or the anger. So I think this is a very good demonstration of the Dharma is something that's lived. It's not something that's figured out. It's not some sort of pure philosophy. So that, I think, that first scene sets up everything that goes on in the rest. The second scene is Shuefang is still pretty upset about what's happened. So he's told Yento about it. And so, you know, Yento says, well, Deshan, great as he is, he's lost it. It's gone. He does not yet know the last word. And you wonder, okay, What is going on here? Is he just agreeing? Or is something else going on? Whenever there's criticism or there's praise in a koan, you have to at least be on your guard because there's a lot of irony in that, more often than not. So we don't know what's going on. But there's at least a suspicion, right, that Shuefang is trying to set... I mean, that Yento is trying to set up a lesson for Shuefang to teach him a great Zen truth. But, I mean, you know, what would the last word be anyway? You know, that phrase just sort of, is it absolute truth? Is it, it has to be something like that, right? It has to be absolute truth or... the Great Awakening, some absolute into some transcendent the latest and greatest point of Zen, what it's all about. You've got to know what it's all about. So, and that's the end of the conversation with Shuifeng, but somebody has ratted out Yento and Shuifeng, and Deshan sends his attendant to go get him and bring him back. And Yento shows up, and Deshan says, you don't agree with me? You don't approve of this old monk? And Yento whispers in his ear, and I suppose he has to whisper in his ear because the attendant is still there and he doesn't want to... He wants the attendant to get the benefit of his teaching, too. And if he just told him what it was all about, it would just be a waste of time and he would miss this great opportunity. But it's remarkable, right? I mean, he whispers... Apparently, he's explaining the last word of Zen to Deshan. I mean, this is all about. I was explaining the last word of Zen to Shuifeng, and here's what it is. And Deshan doesn't say anything. And the translations are a little weird. Most of them just say, okay, Deshan didn't say anything. There are a few translations that'll say, well, yeah, Deshan agreed, and so that was the end of the discussion. You know, well, okay, maybe so. But you have to wonder, what is this last word that Deshan is supposed to know and that Yento does know? But at any rate, so after that third scene, there's the final scene. And the next day, Deshan's come into the Dharma Hall and he gives a Dharma talk. And this is very different from many Dharma talks that he's given before. And Yento is thrilled, right? He's got it now. He understands, I've really got the old guy back on track. So he comes in the front of the hall and he's rubbing his hands and he's laughing and he's going, "Ah, delightful, our old boss has got hold of the last word. From now on, no under the heaven can touch him. We've got the number one best Zen master here. And I explained it to him." So, it's interesting in the same way that the koan doesn't tell us what it was that Yento whispered in Deshan's ear. It doesn't tell us what Deshan said in his talk. So you have to wonder, I mean, clearly that's part of the koan, right? Does it really matter what he said? It was the point seems to be that it was different from everything he had said before. And you have to ask yourself what that was about. And I'll propose that this is Deshan once again meeting a situation in an open and flexible way. His teaching hasn't worked with Shuifeng and Yento, and so as skillful means, he's going to try something very different. So I think the point there is, once again, Deshan's flexibility, his openness, in contrast to, and complete lack of ego, as opposed to Yento's seeming to think that the last word really is a last word. It's supposed to be something that you figure out, some great teaching, some final experience, some answer, some perception of an absolute truth. And he may be completely right in his explanation. You know, he may have whispered, he says, "You know, Master, if Shuifeng had really understood that form is emptiness and emptiness is form, he would understand why you were able to leave like that." Maybe so. But this is an example of when you could have the right answer, but be wrong. Right? Because this isn't about having answers. So I think Wu Men is kind of interesting when he says, as to the last word, neither Yento nor Deshan has yet dreamed of it. So what's that saying? And I think that Yento hasn't dreamed of it because he still doesn't get it. Deshan hasn't dreamed of it because he doesn't think that the last word is something you're supposed to figure out. The last word is that there isn't a real word. You know, when you look at form as emptiness and emptiness as form, part of the point of that is that it's not just that form is something that you can't get your... Nothing you say about the world of form is quite on point. Because any conception, any perception we have of form is shaped by thought, which is it's an empty abstraction. There is no thing there. There's something there, but the thingness, everything we imagine that is involved in being a thing is not the case for the world around us. And at the same time, emptiness, if it's just another perception or another idea that is just contrasted with form, has a conditioned meaning. It's just shaped by form. But emptiness, by definition, is not conditioned. So emptiness itself is empty. So form can't be grasped. Emptiness can't be grasped. You can live with them and you embody them, but you can't capture them with your mind. So Wu Men continues that when you examine them closely, you find they are just like Punch and Judy in a booth, right? There's a play going on, but what's really going... It's all hidden. None of this is really out there. In a Punch and Judy show or a puppet show, you've got the puppets going on, but there's somebody back there who's... What's really going on is there's a person back there running puppets. And so... If you're watching just what Yento and Deshan say, you sort of miss what's going on. And I think that the final verse, if you understand the first word, you understand the last word, right? If you really understand form, you understand how the whole point, everything you think about form falls apart. So you understand the last word. But in any event, neither form nor emptiness, neither the first word or the last word, is a word. It's not a concept. It's not something that can be captured conceptually, ultimately. So you come back again to what our great Master Dogen kept emphasizing, that there may be awakenings and there may be understandings, but the point of this practice is to realize our awakened mind in our awakened activity. We express emptiness. We verify emptiness in our lives. We may do that. We may realize our Buddha nature and not even be aware of it. And I think that would be Deshan's message. And unfortunately, neither Shuifang nor Yento is prepared to hear it yet. So if you've got some disagreements about who said what, I'd be interested in hearing them. Or about what you think about what this might mean. I mean, I think this is a great lesson for me, because as soon as I'm one of those people who, when somebody's shouting at me, sort of, I'm not a Deshan kind of guy yet. I'm working on it, but I'm not a Deshan kind of guy. So I certainly admire him. But Does anybody have anything they'd like to say about something they've noticed about this koan? The translations are usually talking about the content, what he had to say. It was very different from what he usually said, rather than so much about his body. I've always been interested in, it's not really part of this one, but Hisham was famous for just sitting without saying anything when people would ask him a question or talk about Zen to him. I think that would, you know, supposedly, at least in koan practice, you're not supposed to present an answer to a koan, a response to a koan, unless you've got some conviction. And I can imagine, you know, if you go in and talk to the Zen master and says, well, you know, I mean, you know, back in the day when Jiaozhou said this about the dog having Buddha nature, I think this is what that means. And if Deshan's sitting there and just doesn't respond, you know, that could just be very intimidating. It's just, okay, am I wrong? Am I right? I mean, suddenly your conviction would evaporate very quickly, unless you really were pretty confident. Bill.
So two comments. One, so I think about this emptiness and form. So if emptiness is form and form is emptiness, then form is also form. Mm-hmm. And so by transitivity, you can say form also always disrupts form. Mm-hmm. Is that okay? I think that works.
Yeah, I think so, because,
so
yes.
It's kind of undisruptible form.
Yeah.
As long as it's an upgraded form.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So, I think that's a little bit of an area for you to have. The other thing was, I also wondered, especially with the monk who's preparing the lunch, that is there something here about attainment and the way that we just so often tend to be drawn toward some kind of competitive and also maybe narcissistic sense of getting enlightened or whatnot? I mean, if the sort of young monk who is the food preparer or so, willing to sort of mouth off to the old master and say, well, he doesn't know the last word. You know, it just speaks to me with a kind of very competitive sense.
Yeah, and I think that...
Yeah,
and I think that sense is... The fact that Yento says that sort of thing is sort of... You know, within this koan is suggests that he doesn't really have a good grasp of what his practice is supposed to be. That he thinks he has it all figured out. And it's something, he understands the last word, and so he's done now. And
Yento thinks.
Yeah. Yeah, Shuifang, I think, You know, maybe you could argue that Shuifang is also testing Dishan because Dishan's come down and the bell hasn't rung and the drum hasn't been hit yet. And Shuifang's kind of pushing back and say, you know the rules, you know, we express awakened mind by, you know, following the signals, obeying the rules, keeping the schedule. But I think that that falls through a little bit when you just the way he speaks to Deshan just seems more emotional than that. What are you doing here? Rather than just a statement about what it could be. But you know, these things are written so sparingly that there could be a whole lot of very different readings. I mean, it's perfectly possible to read this thing to say that Yento really did wise up Deshan, right? And that's why Deshan gave this completely different talk the next day, because, oh, yeah, okay. And the message could be, well, that even an ordinary monk can be fully awakened and correct a Zen master. I don't think that that's not the most attractive reading to me, but it would be supported by the text. And I'm sure there are other readings as well. Yeah, Michael.
My initial thought when you read it was that Deshan had outdone him.
I think that's a possible reading too. Yeah, I think that's a possible reading too. But I still, I still think that would mean Yento still hasn't quite got it, because he thinks that what Deshan said was the last word in that talk.
Mm-hmm. And then certainly, like, when he says something about just not finding out for yourself, or just seeing sort of nobody's going to tell you what the last word is, and you just understand it, and then the next day you preach it.
Yeah, you know, I think that phrase "last word" or "last phrase" in some translations is sort of hung out there is a hook for us to see. Okay, what would that be? Is there a last word? What would that be? And you could just crack your head trying to figure out what that is.
Well, it reminds me, of course, of Dongshan, Soto founder, asking his teacher, Yunyan, what would you say was your central teaching? And he said, after a pause, just this is it. But I wanted to say a little bit about Shuifang in this. So part of these stories is that you read enough of them and there's this intertextuality that the characters have resonance from other stories about them. And Shuifang, who's the Tenzo here, is famous for being Tenzo for many teachers over a long, long, long period of time before he became a great master. And I don't know if Shuifang ever got the last word, but he ended up having 1,500 students in his monastery.
Yeah.
So Shuifang here is, I think his role on this is not insignificant. So there's lots of stories about Shuifang, you know, and in some ways he's one of these archetypal Zen failures, because, you know, he spent all his time being, you know, just cooking for all the monks before he became a teacher himself. There's also the story, though, about how he came to Deshan, that he was a young monk in the kitchen with Dongshan, and Dongshan saw him. Dongshan, who wrote the Jewel Mara Samadhi, and founder of Soto, said he was sifting out the pebbles from the rice, and he said, "Are you sifting out the rice from the pebbles or the pebbles from the rice?" And he says, "I do it both at the same time." And then the governor said, "Well, what will you feed the monks?" And Trefbaum just turned over the whole thing. And Dongshan said, "No, I can't be your teacher. You better find somebody stronger." And he went to Deshan, who was the one who, when Shuefeng met him, was hitting people with a stick. So anyway, Shuefeng must have been with Deshan for a long time, being the Tenzo when this story happened. And
He would have been a senior student to be Tenzo.
Yeah, so he'd been Tenzo under numbers of teachers, and he'd been Tenzo with Deshan for a long time before when he finally got to Deshan. So there's something about the initial setup of this story that's interesting to me. When Shuefeng challenges Deshan, you know, "Where are you going with your bowls?" And Deshan, you know, hears him. So there's something about that. And then Shuefeng, you know, kind of tweaks Yanto. You know, he says, "Well," you know, he tells Yanto the story, and then Yanto kind of falls for it. So that's another way to read it.
Mm-hmm.
Just to throw that in there. But it's an interesting story. So I want to ask you, is there a last word?
That was it.
Ah.
Things are numberless.